our company in the Middle East? Are we headed toward a one-world government, a one-world religious system? Will America be attacked again? Do ancient prophetic texts warn of a time we are living in? Are we living in the last days, the time of Jacob's trouble? The end of the world is going, what are the increase of what is causing the phenomena we can't agree with? It is real, burgeoning, and not going away. Is this the coming great deception that ancient prophecy warns us about? Does time seem to be accelerating? Join me, your intrepid host, L.A. Marzulli, as we explore these and other riveting and stimulating topics. This is Acceleration Radio. Wow, did I end before the music? Huh. Oh, well. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your intrepid host, L.A. Marzulli. This is Acceleration Radio on the Fringe Radio Network. Great to be here. We just got back from 2 weeks at a secret location, which I am not going to divulge until much later on, until we're ready to divulge it. All I can tell you is that we saw some amazing artifacts and some amazing things, and we'll be in Watcher 6, which is actually called The Secret Cosmic War. That's the subtitle for it, or the title for it. And it'll be in my new up-and-coming book, which will be released more than likely in April sometime. And that will be called On the Trail of the Nephilim, The Secret Cosmic War. Keep your eyes on the blog for that, because we'll be posting release dates for both of those. That's lamarzulli.wordpress.com. So much happened in the 2 weeks that I was gone. It's my head was spinning. And Monday, February 18th, just a couple of days ago, I wrote this blog, and I want to read it to you now. I'm back. Richard and I spent the last 15 days filming Watcher 6. This may be the best in the series yet. That may be an understatement, folks. I'm not going to tell you where we went and what we found, but once we get our ducks in line, I will spill the beans. Sorry. Is that mixing metaphors? The internet was sketchy where we were, but I was able to keep up with world events. Of course, the big shocker was Pope Benedict resigning. Tom Horn and Chris Putman must be overwhelmed with emails and phone calls. We had Putman on Acceleration Radio when Petrus Romanus came out last year. Horn and Putman predicted Benedict would resign, and now it's become a reality. Their book is based on the prophecies of an Irish monk, St. Malachi, who, according to Horn and Putman, had a vision of all the popes and wrote their names down along with a short description of each one. The last pope is supposed to be Peter the Roman, or Petrus Romanus. I've known about the Malachi prophecies for at least a decade, and while I find it interesting, like the Torah codes, I would never let it usurp the prophecies we find in the Guidebook of the Supernatural, i.e. the Bible. We will certainly keep an eye on Benedict's successor, see where it all leads. I believe we are seeing the birth pangs happening all around us. The wars, the rumors of wars, famines, pestilence, earthquakes in diverse places, and of course, signs in the heavens, which brings me to my next point. Added to these signs Jesus warns us will herald the second coming are signs in the heavens. The footage of the Russian meteor was amazing. Okay, it's just a meteor, but combined with everything else, it certainly is out of the ordinary. I can't remember another meteor causing this kind of alarm and damage. Is this business as usual or something more? You be the judge. The Middle East continues to slide into desperation as Syria continues its bloody civil war, which has killed upwards of 70,000 people and displaced thousands more. North Korea is playing with nukes. The dollar continues to slide into oblivion and is propped up by the Federal Reserve printing more and more and more money, and our president calling for more spending. Instead of cutting, we're spending more. The feds have brought over our federal government has brought over a billion bullets, and this begs the question, who will they use them on and what do they fear? There's been a lot of talk about this, folks. Why would our government buy a billion bullets? What are they expecting? Agenda 21 continues to creep into every fabric of our society. And I got to tell you something, folks. Agenda 21, if you know nothing about it, Google it, start to see what's happening. This is the globalist agenda on steroids. And they look at all of us as basically pretty much useless eaters and want to do what's called stack and pack. Reorganize us, abolish private property, and put us into these stack and pack houses, these little condominiums stacked three stories high by a major thoroughfare. So the days of having an acre someplace and growing your own garden, all gone, all gone. So you got to check out this Agenda 21. Gas prices climbed up above $5 again, and on it goes. Closing today's post, it was good to get away from the blog for the last 2 weeks and concentrate on the up-and-coming Watchers film. However, I feel there is an invisible noose that is tightening. We are headed toward a place where freedom and liberty as we know it may be a thing of the past. Drones are now flying over the skies of the United States of America. The national debt is at a historic high. As I mentioned above, the feds are buying over a billion bullets. Do they suspect a civil war? Spring is around the corner. As I have mentioned before, spring is the time when kings go to war. The Middle East is more unstable than ever. Should we expect a war soon? Meanwhile, lights in the sky continue, and UFOs are seen daily. Glad I took some time off. And that was the blog for Monday. I was pretty much on fire that day, and I followed it up with a blog on UFOs. There's a volcano down in Mexico called Popocatépetl, and we have seen this before where UFOs fly in and out of the volcano. There's a link on the blog that shows that again. And then, of course, following the UFO thread the following day, I showed another shot of a UFO in Mexico City. Now, all that to get to this point, I conducted a poll. Now, we didn't get a lot of response on the poll, which kind of bummed me out. I really thought I'd be inundated with at least, 500 letters. Instead, we probably got maybe a dozen letters from people, okay, which is, that in itself is disturbing. You would think that people would have written in with emails and said, hey, we did get some, and I'm going to, let me get to this real quick. Hold on, folks. I want to read you one of these letters, which sort of sums it up. Let me go to poll. Bam, there it is, and let's check this out. Well, LA, I posted the UFO video in my Facebook account. I had maybe 87 friends, including, and he left a bunch of names. I won't count them. They use Facebook to, to do what they do. I gave them a choice of 1 through 10. I got 2 swamp gases and no other responses. So basically, his was a 1. Let's go to the next one, all right? This is from Lorraine. Hi, interesting results from those I try to tell about UFOs. The young who have been brainwashed by the anti-God news all their lives say, you're crazy, you're nuts. When I show them pictures of UFOs on your blog, the answer is, it's phony computer-generated farce. When I tell my daughter about Matthew 24, which says that it will be as it was in the days of Noah in Genesis 6 and then God's circular craft in Ezekiel 1, she becomes hysterical, cries, and tells me that she can't cope with it and is unable to sleep at night because of what I told her. Wah. She told her boyfriend, and he said that I'm crazy, and fortunately, he stays away from me now. I told a Christian friend to look at your website, and she did, and told me that it was a bit too scary to look at anyone. Don't go there, ladies and gentlemen. It's just too scary. Ooh, I just want to watch American Idol. Now, old people like me know what is going on, but we've all been trained to keep our mouths shut and if questioned to say, I don't know a thing about it, or else we will be severely punished by the government. So I usually don't just say anything. I'm trained. Really, I do not want them to come out of the closet, so to speak, because when they do, all hell is going to break loose on Earth. It is bad enough now without them openly ruling and then destroying all life on Earth. God help us all. And she signs her name. One more, and then we will have the results of the poll. Drum roll, please. I show the pics and videos. This is from Richard. I show the pics and videos of the UFO to a friend who was in the seminary at a Baptist Bible college in Clark Summit, PA. And he thinks it's all hogwash. Doesn't believe in it. I am shocked, though. I am a born-again believer and can clearly see these are the last days before the deception, coming tribulation. I talk with many Christians, including our church pastor, and they just don't get it. And that is what shocks me. Keep up the good work. All right. All that to get to this point, and I will read the poll. Overwhelmingly, remember, 1 was swamp gas, hogwash. 10 was tell me more. We had an overwhelming response. Clearly the majority, 90% were 1s. That leads me to tell you something. I know of a friend of mine has a friend of his, okay? So a friend of mine has a friend of his. They're both Christian guys. And this one friend has been following my work for some time and gets all the books and DVDs and stuff and checks the blog out and loves what we do and, you know, encourages me from time to time. But he was trying to show his other friend some of the literature, and the friend became hostile and said, "I'm not interested in this. I don't want to know about it. Leave me alone. Don't tell me about this stuff. I don't care." And you see, this is what's amazing to me, folks. We sit in churches. We, the Christian church, sits in churches week after week hearing about the supernatural, right? Jesus walking on water, Moses parting the Red Sea, Jesus changing the water into wine, right? The angel of death passing over the children of Israel and destroying the firstborn of the Egyptians. Week after week after week, a donkey talking, right? Week after week after week, we hear these cute little Bible stories. A flood which wiped everyone out except for eight people. Hello? What about Jonah and the whale? You know how crazy we sound? Well, Jonah was swallowed by a whale, and then the 3 days later, he was spit up on the beach. Hello? If that's not the supernatural, I don't know what is. Wake up. We sit in these pews and listen to this stuff week after week and then go, "Oh, the supernatural's not manifesting. No, it's okay. Let's go have our pot roast. Happy Sunday dinner," right? And the moment any of the watchmen, myself included, begin to point the stuff out, what's manifesting in real time, "Oh, it's swamp gas. Ah, it's just a bunch of swamp gas. Oh, it's computer-generated nonsense." Excuse me, folks, we are here, and this has just got to stop. The church needs to wake up and understand that when 2 Thessalonians tells us and instructs us, it will be like the days, that Satan will come with all signs and lying wonders. That should be a huge wake-up call, and we do ourselves a great disservice by not understanding the tenuous, tumultuous, unprecedented times that we find ourselves in. And it ain't going away. What about the meteor over Russia? "Oh, I guess that's just business as usual, L.A. You're just an alarmist. Just go back to sleep. La, la, la. Da, da, da. Will the men please come forward and receive the morning offering? Don't say a thing about the Nephilim. And never talk about prophecy in the church." Hello? That's a scooter pie barking in the background. I mean, think about it, folks. We sit there and we've got the guidebook of the supernatural, i.e. the Bible. And we open up its pages and some, you know, pastors in front. "And God said, let the floodwaters rain." And we listen to this stuff, right? Week after week. Cracking myself up here. Amen. We listen to this stuff week after week after week and turn the pages and drop our little tithe in the basket. And then we just completely go click, and we will not look at what the supernatural is doing and manifesting in modern day time. And I just find that absolutely, I'm amazed by it. I'm dumbfounded by the church that supposedly is the guardian of the supernatural, because the Bible is a book of the supernatural. Take the supernatural, and I'm including prophecy here. You know how crazy prophecy is? "Yeah, it's but in the latter days, you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade without this mark." How's that grab you, pal? I mean, think about that, folks. 2,000 years later, this mark of the beast is talked about, John the Revelator. And here we are, we're living in a time where we've got the technology to do that. I've written extensively about that in the Cosmic Chess Match, so I'm not going to belabor it here. But it's just amazing. And the church, for the most part, I'm painting with a very broad brush here, but for the church, for the most part, it's got that snooze going, man. They don't care. They don't want to hear about it. Don't confuse us with the facts. Don't tell us what's really happening. We just want to play church. We just want to come in here and have our, you know, rock band, you know, play some great music, and we'll all raise our hands and feel good for an hour. We'll put on our plastic Jesus smiles and give each other hugs. But God forbid we talk about the supernatural. Oh, we don't want to. I had one Christian ministry. I won't mention any names here, okay? We showed them Watchers 4 and 5. They were all set to bring me on and do a TV show and everything. And you know what they told us? "Oh, L.A., it's just too dark. We can't go with that. It emphasizes the demonic, L.A. We just can't go with that here. it might scare some of our viewers. We don't want to tell them the truth. Can't tell them the truth, can we? There you go, folks. Not making this stuff up. Okay.
Wasteful laughter or what?
That Ellie Marzulli is really on a roll tonight and is going to stifle the truth. Don't listen to that man on the radio, folks. He's probably on something. There is no such thing as UFOs. We're not in the end times. Everything is fine. Drink some Kool-Aid, Gatorade, or a nice big gulp. Some more soft drinks. Have some sugar. Watch American Idol. Watch the reruns of American Idol. Don't worry, folks. There's nothing to fear.
Well,
I'm going to continue. Anyway, folks, I mean, that's pretty much where we are, which to me is incredibly demoralizing. I'm just appalled.
Hold on one second.
Our guest tonight is Robert Reedland, and he's written this incredible book, Jesus in the Third Temple. We've got some questions for him, and he'll be in right at the end of the break, which will be in about 4 or 5 minutes. Anyway, let me read this to you. Jesus in the Third Temple, the Complete Guide to Ancient History and Secret Rituals of the Red Heifer Ceremony. This is going to be really cool. Why building a third temple in Jerusalem is a Jewish rite and a Christian imperative. The book is of vital importance to Christians and Jews who question the urgency of building the third temple in Jerusalem. It answers the most critical why, where, when, and how questions by revealing the most important untold secret of the Holy Land. King Solomon's temple helped shape Christianity as we know it today. With Jesus in the Third Temple, you are transported back in time to bear silent witness to the ancient sanctification and purification rites of God's chosen people. That was a time when they, and they alone, worshiped their God upon the hollow grounds of the Temple Mount. Then you will hear and learn ancient secrets that have survived time, cataclysm, conquest, and change. Secrets shared only with those deemed worthy to enter the Kodesh HaKodeshim, so as to be schooled in the curriculum of the sacred. Then you will understand that which only a few have known. God's divine presence, Shekinah, actually dwelled in the tabernacle, Solomon's temple, and the second temple. Sharing this ancient secret is an imperative for Christians. This is because our present-day understanding of the sacred site is largely based on the limited knowledge of those who once lived and worked outside its walls, even though they cherished it as the holiest site of their nation. Their misperceptions have endured until now. So we'll bring Robert Reedland back right after the break, and I guess we'll go to break now because it's 6:20. You're listening to Celebration Radio. I am your intrepid host who had fun with the rant this evening, but what can I say, folks? People in the church will not look at the phenomena, and shame on them. Keep it right here, folks. We'll be back after the break with Robert Reedland and the Jesus in the Third Temple.
You're listening to Acceleration Radio with L.A. Marzulli on the Fringe Radio Network. We'll be right back.
There is a strange phenomenon that has been occurring on our planet throughout history. Yes, I'm talking about UFOs. We've heard all there is to hear regarding the UFO phenomenon, but have you really? You may be surprised to learn what you don't know. Today, there has been a paradigm shift to the belief in cosmic evolution. Is there life out there? If so, how will that change the world? Will we see the return of the Nephilim? What is the evolution connection? This is not just another book on UFOs, it answers a very critical question. Why are they here? What is their intent? After this read, you will gain a clear understanding from behind the scenes of the UFO phenomenon. The Alien Agenda. Buy The Alien Agenda at alien-agenda.com.
Visit www.comein.ws today. Train at home for a new career in healthcare. Take advantage of affordable tuition, short completion timelines, and graduate assistance. Over 65,000 students have chosen us for these benefits and many more. Our school's commitment to quality ensures that graduates have the skills they need to succeed in their new career. Our courses include medical transcription and editing, medical coding and billing, pharmacy technician, with Walgreens and CVS externships available, computer technician, medical administrative assisting, medical billing, administrative assisting, and more. Our programs are all approved for MyCAA funding, which can completely cover the costs for eligible military spouses. Students in the Canadian provinces of British Columbia, Alberta, Ontario, and Quebec can also enroll in select programs. Learn more. Visit www.comein.ws today. That's www.comein.ws. Visit today.
How would you like the opportunity to purchase gold 1 gram at a time and to accelerate your portfolio in order to get out of the money system? GoldByTheBars.com is the answer. Are you prepared for the collapse of the dollar? Not if you are not into precious gold or silver. Let GoldByTheBars.com show you how to do this. Now is the best time before the total collapse of our money system. Go to GoldByTheBars.com. Make your money worth more than it is now. It's GoldByTheBars.com.
This is Acceleration Radio with L.A. Marzulli. And now, back to the show.
And we're back, folks. This is L.A. Marzulli. You're listening to Acceleration Radio. Our guest tonight, Robert Ryland, and it's just great to have him here. Can't wait to get into it. And Robert has written the book. I've already told you about that before the break, Jesus and the Third Temple, The Complete Guide to the Ancient History and Secret Rituals of the Red Heifer Ceremony. I have it. It is actually, let me just get it out here. It's almost 700 pages. It's 650 with appendix and everything else. 654. I've got a hold on the back cover. I've got a listing of my pages and notes. I'm starting on 24 up to 534. So I've read the book, loved the book. I found it very informative. And, of course, there are links right on my blog site if you're interested in procuring a copy of it for yourself. It's very, very fascinating. And, Robert, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, L.A. I'm privileged and honored to be here again.
Well, the privilege and honor is all ours, sir.
I would like to add about the book, the most amazing thing about this book is that these stories have been well documented by historians and in scripture, but they've never been told by our shepherds.
Hmm.
They're all new.
Hmm. And isn't that interesting that that's what I was ranting about before you came on?
Oh, good.
The fact that the shepherds in the church don't, for the most part, don't inform the sheeple what's really going on and keep everyone in the dark. And I find it unconscionable. I want to start off tonight. There was a, you know, I get a lot of emails and questions that come in about Acceleration Radio. And here's one. It's from Mark. And he says, L.A., would like to know what Robert thinks about Ron Wyatt's claim of finding the Ark and Yeshua's blood that came to life in an Israeli lab. Let's address, it's like a three-part question, but are you familiar with Ron Wyatt's claim of finding the Ark of the Covenant?
I'm not familiar with Ron Wyatt, but I have seen others. I can't remember his name right now. He's made a lot of money on books about the Ark of the Covenant, but all they have to do is read Jeremiah 3:16. There ain't going to be no Ark. They won't even remember it, the words of Jeremiah, not mine.
Right.
There wasn't even a replica of the Ark in the Second Temple. And Jesus is certainly not going to live in some golden box in the Third Temple. And so I believe that there's a lot of hysteria and maybe well-intentioned scholarship going on, but they've missed it. All they have to do is read Jeremiah 3:16. It's plain enough. No ark. Also, while we're at it, though, I read about in the paper when Kreutzer and Bollinger back in the 80s claimed that they had found the Ark of the Covenant in a cave on Mount Nebo. And They measured it without touching it and took photographs of it and gave it to the Rothschild family in Italy. Mm-hmm. That was the end of it. You don't see them on Larry King Live or on even on TBN. They dusted their hands off and left it. But my then wife, who had since gone to be with the Lord, I got her to call them up. She talked to Kreutzer, and he sounded very sincere of what he saw. They went up on Mount Nebo, and they violated the by trespassing on the Marmalite, I believe it's a Marmalite area. Mm-hmm. And that's since been closed off to everybody. They won't let anyone up there. But they really got the archaeological world down their back of their fatigue jackets. they were really angry. But that's kind of a brief summary of what I know and feel about the Ark.
And let me just read Jeremiah 16. In those days, when your numbers... In those days when your numbers have increased greatly in the land, declares the Lord, people will no longer say the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. It will never enter their minds or be remembered. It will not be missed, nor will another one be made. At that time, they will call Jerusalem the throne of the Lord, and all nations will gather in Jerusalem to honor the name of the Lord. No longer will they follow the stubbornness of their evil hearts. In those days, the people of Judah will join the people of Israel, and together they will come from a northern land to the land I gave your ancestors as an inheritance. Wow. Pretty clear there.
How plain can it be?
Yep, pretty clear. This is a two-part question. Mark also asks, Kent Hovind's discussion with the temple heart maker. Apparently, he asked the high priest who was preparing for the temple about the ark. The priest just smiled and said, "It is taken care of." So we've sort of already answered that, and I'm going to let it go from there.
Grant Jeffers is the other author that's written about the ark.
Yes. What intrigued me about your book, and we could spend the whole rest of the show just talking about this one aspect of it, was the idea that Jesus was crucified on the place of the skull.
Right.
And from that place, the Roman soldier could see into the Holy of Holies. Give us the background on that. This is really the centrality of your book, in my opinion. And I just found it absolutely fascinating. Tell us about that, please, Robert.
Yes, L.A., you have hit on the core stem of the whole book, really. It's what got me going. When I heard that, first of all, when I read through the Bible, every time I came to the story about the glory of the Lord, I wondered, gosh, that must have been a traumatic event. What happened? How did they feel? What went on in Jerusalem when that happened? What did the priest tell the king and the people? It just must have been a terrible event. But I couldn't find anything on it. I looked and looked and looked. And Ezekiel has a marvelous prophecy about it. He tells it in great detail. And by the way, while we're at it, Ezekiel's prophecies are in chronological order. The chapter 37 comes before chapter 38 and 39 with Gog and Magog.
Yes.
But anyway, this is back in 8 through 11. And so I asked that question. I got fascinated by it. And then in the Biblical Archaeology Review, I saw where Professor Asher Kaufman, whose day job was as a professor of quantum physics at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and he took it upon himself to find the Holy of Holies on the Temple Mount. And he got permission from the Waqf, the Muslim authorities, to go up there and to go around and take a few measurements. If you and I go up there, and if we even open a notebook, we're liable to get off the place. But unless it's the Quran, you're not to be doing that.
Yeah.
But anyway, he performed an amazing analysis. I cannot find any error in it. It is flawless. He wrote a beautiful book. And he was challenged into this by the Holy Spirit, I am sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very touching story, but he got stuck for a time. It's apparently because he had forgotten the description of the tabernacle in Exodus and the description of the temple. He found his daughter got in the habit of reading from the Bible right after dinner each evening. And they would all three sit down. And he's an Orthodox Jew.
Mm-hmm.
And she passed away at the age of 19 from a mysterious disease. But his wife and he kept that up. And he came to Ezekiel chapter 8, I believe it is, and read the part where the Lord became just wrathful at the priests who were standing in front of the temple facing east. Oh, with their backs to the temple. This was an abomination. Hmm. And it woke him up. Yes, the temple faced east. And he apparently had overlooked that before because it's clear in Scripture. But anyway, he found this round stone up there that's about 5 or 6 feet in diameter, and it's somewhat raised above the ground. And it's a solid bedrock-type limestone, and it's got a little cupola over it, and it's called the Dome of the Tablets, and it's about 110 meters northwest of the Dome of the Rock.
Hmm.
Where tradition has claimed the temple stood for ever since about 600, the year 600, when the Muslims took over the place. But I find Kaufman's analysis flawless. I've read through it a couple of times in great detail, and I am an engineer by day job, and so I look for details like that. As you can, in fact, I don't think anybody but an engineer could have figured out this story. But L.A., I could take you tomorrow.
Oh, I wish you would.
to the place of the cross on the Mount of Olives. Because there is only one spot on earth where the priest could stand and see the Babylonian curtain that covered the doors of the temple, and which they kind of carelessly call the veil, because they didn't have any other word for it, I guess. But I could take you to the spot where he stood and sprinkled the blood of the red heifer 7 times, before the tabernacle, and he had to be able to see the entire curtain through the open east gate. And it was about 60 feet tall and about 40 feet wide. And it must be lighted by the sun entirely, with the sun coming up behind him, directly behind him, which occurs at 2 times a year around Passover and around Yom Kippur.
Wow.
During the vernal and autumnal equinox, when in the northern hemisphere, the sun is directly east and west. And but it's one Sabbath limit from the Holy of Holies on the Mount of Olives, and Talmud, the para tractate, which means cow, para tractate tells that the place was like a shelf, almost as if somebody had taken a bulldozer and cut out a flat place on the western face of the Mount of Olives. And you know, I saw that after I got home from Israel, my last trip over there, and I had found the place. I had surveyed it in from Kaufman's information and where a Sabbath limit would be. And there's a photograph of it, even in my book. It says, could this be the Mifkat altar? And it is a flat place on the western face of the Mount of Olives, one Sabbath limit from the Dome of the Tablets, and there are four little goats there under a shade tree. And my then wife Beth and I stumbled through bramble and bush and thorns to get up there, but what a glorious experience.
That's amazing.
Love to take you there tomorrow.
I wish I could take you up on that invitation, sir.
Yeah.
Be incredible.
Well, it's about $1,000 for airfare on LL, I think.
that's kind of doable.
Oh, yeah. That's reasonable.
I'm just kind of summing through your book.
Have I answered all your questions, L.A.?
No, not, we haven't even started yet.
No, I mean on that one. That
yeah, well, that's pretty good. When Jesus is hanging on the cross and he says, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," my God, why have you forsaken me? What is his viewpoint, in your opinion? What is he seeing when he utters that cry?
I believe he was looking at the Babylonian curtain on the door of the temple. Certainly, like he was playing the part of the high priest in a way.
Uh-huh.
Only it was his blood, our red heifer blood, that was being sprinkled toward the tabernacle. It gives a lump in your throat to think about it, actually. He is our red heifer. Mm-hmm. And he fulfilled the law of the red heifer up there in that place. That's where all of the sacrifices were poured out, L.A. All. The most important one, of course, was his. But even the ashes from the altar were carried up there and poured out. And the atonement goat was burned up there, and of course the red heifer was burned up there. Mm-hmm. And the daily sin offering of the bullock was burned up there. And this is during a period of about 1,000 years.
Wow.
And what is the most visible, recognizable portion of a living being that remains after you burn its carcass in a fire?
A skull.
Skull. Well, now, funny, how about that? And the place was called Golgotha, which means in Aramaic, skull.
Hmm.
The place of the skull. That's an understatement. There were probably a million skulls cascading down that hill toward the temple from that spot. And the stench was probably terrible because when you burn an animal, it doesn't all get burned. There's always some charred remnants. So it was not an ugly, I mean, it was a very ugly scene. It was not something nice. And that's what sin is. That's the way the Lord has of showing us that sin is not to be beholden as something admirable. It stinks. It looks horrible. It's repulsive.
when Jesus, you mentioned this in your book, and I found this just amazing. When Jesus is being challenged by the Pharisees, and he says, "Before Abraham was, I am."
Right.
And you believe that he said that at that very spot, which is why he was crucified at that very spot. Tell us about that.
The law called for, the Roman law especially, called for the offender to be executed in the place where the offense was committed. And Jesus must have said that he was a king up there at that place, or near that Mifkat altar.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew, he planned all of this. A centurion or a priest or nobody else picked out that place for the crucifixion and the time or anything else. Jesus planned the whole ordeal because timing is everything. And then, especially at this spot, geometry is everything. He had to be at that same spot where the heifer's ashes are sprinkled and where all of the ashes of those, all of the sacrifices are poured out. And I think it's Leviticus 4:12 says it must be a place where the ashes naturally flow down. And they certainly do. They flow right down toward the Dome of the Tablets where the temple stood. Isn't that a coincidence?
Yeah. Amazing.
He engineered this whole thing right down to the last jot and tittle, as we know.
And Leviticus 4:12 states, but the height of the bull and all its flesh, as well as the head and the legs, the internal organs and the intestines, that is, all the rest of the bull, he must take outside the camp to a place ceremonial clean where the ashes are thrown and burn it there in a wood fire on the ash heap. And, of course, this is, again, this is the centrality of the book. This is where this happened. This, the same place where Yeshua, Jesus, is crucified is exactly the same place that the red heifer was sacrificed and all these other offerings. So let me ask you this. We've heard over the years that the temple faithful have reconstructed the implements and tools according to the Levitical law to reinstate animal sacrifice on the Temple Mount. Last time you were on the show, I asked you this, but that was a couple of years back, and I think we need to go over this again. What about the ashes of a red heifer? We know that before the rabbis can go on to the Temple Mount, they need those ashes to purify the area. What are your thoughts on that?
I followed Wendell Jones for many years, a few decades. And, of course, he was the person who was searching for the ashes of the heifer. And he was a Baptist minister from Arlington, Texas. And besides that, a pretty good archaeologist. And, by the way, he inspired Steven Spielberg and the producer's name has escaped me, but he inspired the character Indiana Jones. But he told everybody he was searching for the Ark of the Covenant because he didn't want anybody to know what he really was searching for.
Wow, okay.
It's really more valuable than the Ark of the Covenant. And the Muslims know this. In fact, the first book of the Quran is, guess what? The cow.
Huh.
I'm referring to the red heifer.
Mm.
But before we go too far further, I wanted to go back to one thing you did mention, and that is outside the camp. That means it must be at one Sabbath limit from the Holy of Holies. There are three camps. The first camp is in the temple itself. The second camp is out to the wall. And the third camp is at one Sabbath limit from the Holy of Holies.
Mm-hmm.
And it must be outside the camp. And any execution must be outside the camp. And that's why the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and even the Dome of the Tablets and the Gordon's Calvary.
Right.
They're inside the camp.
And so that can't possibly work.
Not only that, they're behind the temple. They would have had to have spotlights and mirrors and telescopes in order to see the ceremony from there. Behind the temple, there's no place to have that ceremony.
Robert, is this place even on the map anymore? I mean, in other words, like if I went there, if I went to Jerusalem, let's say, without you today, and from your book, could I find my way to that spot, do you think? Or would it be difficult?
If you're pretty good at reading diagrams and And if you know enough about map reading to get out a scale and measure, I think I quoted in there how many meters is it, 890-something meters, something like that. Mm-hmm. You could, that's what I did. I surveyed myself up there to that spot.
Wow.
By going east of the Dome of the Tablets, and you can do that pretty easily by lining up the Dome of the Tablets with about the second notch in the wall to the left of Suleiman's Gate, which some people mistakenly refer to as the East Gate.
Okay.
That's not the East Gate. The East Gate is the East Gate of the Temple, and it's not there anymore.
Wow.
There is so much error and confusion and tradition that blocks our attainment of the truth. It's heartbreaking. Hmm. That's what I have tried to do in this book.
Well, I love your book and would highly recommend it to anyone. Let me ask you, because you know time is drawing down here, we're almost at the 10-minute mark. You talk about, and I've heard this apocryphal story many times before, but your book nailed it. And it talked about the Christians leaving Jerusalem because of something that happened to the Shekinah glory, which was in the temple. Tell us that story, because you know you've done the homework, you've done the research, you've talked to the rabbis, you look at the ancient texts. I think your scholarship is beyond reproach, and again, highly recommend the book. It's a challenging read, almost 700 pages, but well worth the effort. Please tell us about that story when the Shekinah leaves the temple, how the Christians react to it, how the Jews react to it, and then tell us the conclusion.
Thank you, Lynn. You don't have to read the book on one night, you know. When the Christians and a lot of the Jewish people started the diaspora, really was in 62, 4 years before the Shekinah departed the temple, when James, the brother of Jesus, was martyred.
Wow.
They said, uh-oh. He was known as the second most righteous man who ever lived. He was called the man with camel knees. He spent so much time on his knees in prayer on the hard ground and rocks that his knees were calloused like a camel's. But anyway, that's when a lot of them left. The really wise ones got out of Dodge when that happened. And but when the Shekinah departed the temple, Josephus describes it. It was a public event. It was announced to everyone. And some people, the ignorant people, said, oh, hot dog, the temple is open to everyone now, and God has placed us in his confidence, and he's opened up the temple for, and instead of closing it up as he has in past centuries, and oh, whoopee. Well, duh. The ones who knew, who had studied the scriptures and who were dwelled by the Holy Spirit, said, uh-oh, this is not good. They probably, L.A., I think they probably also referred back to when Solomon's temple was destroyed. I would speculate, although there is no written record of it available, that these same things happened. Maybe even the same signs appeared. But one of the most amazing and convincing signs is that after the crucifixions, the rabbis lament about this. They call it 40 years before the temple was destroyed. They don't refer to what happened then, but all you got to do is subtract 40 from 70, and 30 when the crucifixion happened. After that, none of these miracles ever appeared in the temple. And one of the most dramatic ones was the fact that the westernmost light of the candlestick, of the menorah, was always lighted first. And all the candles were filled to the same level with oil. That one was lighted first, and the others were lighted off of its flame. But if it outlasts it, during the time of Simeon the Righteous, most beloved priest, it outlasted all of the others for 40 years. This went on during his entire tenure. And after that, if it did, that was a good omen. But during this 40 years, before the temple was destroyed, it never outlasted the others.
Wow.
And the other miracles, one of them is the crimson strap that was tied on the horns of the atonement goat and under his throat to simulate having been cut. That was hung on one of the gates of the temple, and the Azazel goat, the scapegoat, was led out of the city. And when he reached the wilderness, that crimson strap would turn white as snow. But that never happened during those 40 years. None of the other. There were about seven miracles, and none of them ever happened. And the rabbis knew that this was not good. That they were, and the Romans were already getting on their case, you know.
Sure.
So they weren't blind. And that's why Bendel Jones found on that copper scroll that led him to the ashes, I'm sure he found the ashes, because they stopped talking about it. But there's also, it says, with that, with the ashes, are the directions for finding other items of the temple. I believe, L.A., that those ornaments that Titus captured and paraded past the Colosseum through Rome were fake. They were not, maybe fake is the wrong word, but they were made to look like the real thing. And but the real stuff is buried out there in those caves in Qumran, like the ashes are buried.
Wow.
Now, they had the same problem they had when they came back from Babylon, however. They hid the ashes away then. But nobody's clean. Nobody's been purified for 2,000 years. And they've been walking across graves all over the earth, everywhere. So, what did they do? They raised children in a clean place. And that would be a place that is stone capped and has a dead air space at least four finger breadths underneath. And that would insulate them from the ground beneath. So that if some prehistoric Neanderthal or Cro-Magnon guy is buried down there, they would be insulated from his remains and would still be clean. So they raised clean children. And then they had them take a pinch of the ashes and put it in the water and dip the hyssop in it. And it's a really bizarre story from there on. We don't have time to go into all of it here. But it's in the book. You got to read the book.
You got to read the book. It's fascinating. And tell us about, we've got 5 minutes left quickly. And I hate to do this to you, but the Shekinah glory was over the temple, in the temple, after Jesus was crucified, and it left and sat for 3.5 years on the Mount of Olives,
yes.
And then came back in. And tell us about that, please.
He came back in after going on the roof of the temple and sat there until Sukkot, Shavuot, Pentecost. He sat there until Pentecost, about 50 days, and then went back in for just one more look at the temple, and it was a very sad occasion, and then came out and said, "Let us depart hence," and went over to the Mount of Olives and sat, and it's the same word for sitting Shiva, mourning
wow.
loved one,
wow.
and sat there for 3.5 years, "Return unto me, and I will return unto you." But we would not. And so he ascended to heaven, saying, "I will go back to my place." Hosea 5:15, by the way. That's quite a story. Now, I wish I could. Another fascinating story is why the Jewish cemetery is where it is. And I told an Orthodox rabbi at a funeral about this, and he didn't have a clue, but he was fascinated by what I told him. That's a beautiful story in itself, because that's where Yeshua is going to alight when he returns.
Mm.
And the mount will cleave in the midst thereof. Half of it will move toward the north, and half might toward the south. And so the Jewish cemetery is respectfully to the south of the midst thereof.
Amazing.
They don't want the cleaving to be where their grave is and dump them down into the bowels of the earth. So that's where it is. And it says, we shall break through the soil and rise to meet him. And that's how the Jewish rapture, what I call the Jewish rapture, comes about.
Wow.
And on the Feast of Trumpets, just 10 days before Yeshua arrives, they will be gathered up out of thy graves. I will say to the east, give up my people. I will say to the north, let my young ones go, and so on. And this is not just in one place. I think it's two times in Isaiah. It's once in Jeremiah. I believe it's in Ezekiel. It's about five or six times, and they're all noted in the book, of course. But what a story.
Amazing. Robert, how do we get the book? How can people procure this book? And again, I highly recommend it. It is just an amazing read. And you're right. You don't. It took me many sittings to get through this book. And sometimes I would just read a chapter and then reread it because I found it just so fascinating. Tell us how to get that.
You like to go back and smell the roses.
Exactly.
This is not that kind of book where you rush through it. Answer your question. The publisher, Marshall Masters, his website is yaobooks.com. And if you go there, you'll see where you can buy the book. I believe it's also on my webpage, which is jesusandthethirdtemple.com/podcasts. And you can listen in to Marshall interviewing me about the book and learn a lot more about it. And it's really entertaining. I like to listen to it myself, not because I like to listen to me, but Marshall has a gift for getting things out of me that I don't even were in there. But it's on that page, jesusandthethirdtemple.com. But you can also get it from Amazon or BNN.
Wonderful. Well, Robert, that's all the time we have for tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Robert Ryland, Jesus in the Third Temple. Again, I highly recommend the book. It's in my library. I refer to it over and over again. I talk about it sometimes when I'm out on the road and refer back to Robert's mega work, magnum opus, as it were. Robert, thanks so much for coming on Acceleration Radio.
You can also get the book electric for, it's only like $9.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic.
Instead of the printed version, if you don't want to put out that money. But the printed version is much better, I think, because you...
Yeah. I have the printed version. I love it.
You make marks in it. It's just much more of a reference to have at your side.
It's wonderful. Well, Robert, my friend, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. And that's all the time we have for. You're listening to Acceleration Radio. Our guest tonight has been Robert Ryland. Check out his book, folks, Jesus in the Third Temple. You can go to my blog. I've got links to it there. Also, by the way, folks, I will be... my only Southern California appearance so far, March 15th and 16th, Southern California Conference, Calvary Chapel, Bellflower. I'll be speaking there with Doug Hamp and Gunny Shimura. Doug and I will be kind of kicking things off on Friday night with a one-hour primer each, and then, of course, following up with a two-hour presentation on Saturday. That's March 15th and 16th. It is listed on my blog, lamarzulli.wordpress.com. Hope to see you there. And of course, folks, you can check out Robert Ryland's book. I've got links on the blog, so you can get his book. Highly recommend it. And that, of course, is lamarzulli.wordpress.com. That's all the time we have for tonight, folks. You've been listening to Acceleration Radio. I'd like to thank Fringe Radio Network for producing the show, and, of course, Rick for all his hard work and at the helm here. You're listening to Acceleration Radio. We'll be back again next week. I believe Doug Hamp will be on, and that'll be fun, and we will talk to Doug. And the week after that, Bill Salas. So it should be got a nice little lineup coming. I'm trying to get Chris Putman in and have him weigh in on the Pope Benedict stepping down. Anyway, folks, that's all the time we have for. Thanks for listening. Remember, I'll see you either on the air or in the air. Good night, everybody.
Good night, and God bless.